Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over Rumble, YouTube, or another network, and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to start off with our scripture reading, picking up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. We'll be reading John chapter 14, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 14. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And whither I go, ye know, and the way ye know. Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also, and from henceforth ye know him and have seen him. Philip saith unto him, Lord, show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. Jesus saith unto him, Have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, Show us the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? The words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very works' sake. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do. Because I go unto my Father. And whatsoever ye shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If ye shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. If ye love me, keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another Comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. Yet a little while, and the world seeth me no more, but ye see me. Because I live, ye shall live also. And that day ye shall know that I am in my Father, and ye in me, and I in you. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him, and will manifest myself to him. Judas saith unto him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself unto us, and not unto the world? Jesus answered and said unto him, If a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him, and make our abode with him. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and the word which ye hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me. These things have I spoken unto you, being yet present with you. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things, and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I have said unto you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. Ye have heard how I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If ye loved me, ye would rejoice, because I said, I go unto the Father, for my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it come to pass, that when it is come to pass, ye might believe. Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh, and hath nothing in me. But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do. Arise, let us go hence.
Okay, Jen, do we have any announcements or any questions?
Yes, we have both, John. I believe Rich is on the call.
Okay. He should be able to unmute himself. I believe we're just in the mute mode here.
Is okay, Rich? He's unmuted.
Yeah, I'm on, John.
Okay, you got the mic.
All right, thank you. I wanted to ask for some help from the members of NLA, anybody that would like to participate. I'm having difficulty getting word out to First Amendment auditors. I believe I'm being blocked, but I don't know that for sure. So if anybody knows any First Amendment auditors anywhere in the country or would like to help find them, I can give you a list of them. All I'm asking for people to do is to give them my email address and ask them to seek me out. I have some information that might help them in fine-tuning their First Amendment audits. That's basically it. And I'll give you a list of this Bay Area Transparency is one of them up in Sacramento area. Long Island audits, it's obvious it's in Long Island. Erie County audits, it's in New York also. I think it's in central upstate New York, I believe, anyway. San Joaquin audits. Tyrant Terminator is one. I find him to be very good. He's in the Midwest, excuse me. I sent the list to Jan. I don't know if he can send it out to people or not. And I hate like hell to give Jan more work than he needs. But I'll get in touch with me. I'll give you my email address. Get in touch with me, and I'll send you a list of where they are. But if you know anybody, what I'm trying to do is basically help fine-tune their skills because they're putting it on the line out there on the street. And I see it as they're doing a good job, and they're having some success. So if we can just tweak, or I can just tweak them a little bit, towards the common law and maybe eventually bring them into the fold here in NLA. They have millions, collectively, they have millions of viewers or subscribers across the country. So I believe the potential is there to bring these people on board, or at least some of them. You know, I can't speak for everybody. But I'd like to make the effort and try, because if we don't try certain things, nothing's going to get done. So with that, I'll give you my email address. I try to give you a few minutes so that you can get a pencil. It's J as in John, A as in Apple, M as in Mary, C as in Cat, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, the number 8828 at Yandex, YANDEX.com. And I'll say it again quicker, JAMCMS88 at Yandex.com. And my name is Rich Merritt. If you have an inkling to help out, I'd really appreciate it, because I think there's potential here. And the only way to find out is to put the effort into it. So with that, I thank you very much. I don't know if John's going to open up for questions or not, or we're just going to go with that, but I'm fine with either.
Okay, we appreciate that, Richard.
Thank you for the time, John. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And, of course, that benefits the work that we're doing here to make these kind of connections with anyone. if anybody has any information, contact, or would like to try to contact different people who have podcasts or whatever is going on the internet where they have a following, where we could be interviewed or make a connection with them, have conversation, lead them to education, the process and procedures that we're working through the committees of safety, you know, any kind of a connection, we'd appreciate that. So you can get a hold of Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org if you've got some kind of a connection that you can give us some information, and then we can follow up on that. Okay, back to you, Jan. Do we have questions?
Yes, we have quite a few, John. The first one, since I am a victim of judicial fraud and my property was stolen and I was forced to sign a settlement under duress to give my property away for free, do I sue the judge, two lawyers, and two property developers in federal court or file an action at law for now to just get my property back before my land is totally destroyed and two new houses are built? This fraud was based on an agreement between two builders and myself that was two pages and did not have full disclosure. But the judge of the course deemed it to be an enforceable contract. I was denied a trial by jury. Evidence was not admissible by the judge, and the lawyers of a very generous cash offer from me to the builders to walk away from the project before the initial dig.
Okay.
Looking for help.
All right. I don't really have enough information, but generally speaking, a lawsuit sounds like something, if you put everything together and they know how to do it, then they could file a lawsuit and begin there. Again, I don't know exactly what's going on. There are some situations, you know, that people are kind of protected by the legal system, you know, large corporations particularly, and you know, whatever players are involved in whatever it is that's going on. There's a lot of fraud going on out there, a lot of property being stolen, all kinds of different ways property is being stolen from the people. Of course, the biggest are the banks. They come out, or different, whoever's holding mortgages, for instance, which they have no power or authority to do, but they do. They get through with it because the court system is corrupt, the judges are corrupt, we're under civil law in the courts, not common law, and it's an uphill battle. It would be, from what I can understand, and I don't know that I have enough information to say that this is the case, but it sounds like they didn't get due process. And, of course, they trick you into this game, bringing you into nisi prius courts, which the word nisi prius is two words, what it means, and lust first. And so you have to agree to the process before you can go forward with the case. All courts that operate under codes, statutes, they're all the same way. So once you go in and you agree, you make a plea, plead guilty, or innocent, or whatever the case may be, at that point you are agreeing to it. So it's a game they play. Whereas really the only cases that those individuals can hear in that kind of a situation are cases, commercial activity violations, or someone working for a government agency who's under the statutes, codes, regulations, or whatever the case may be then. So, it sounds like you can go after them for due process, but you have to put everything together properly. You want to get a good affidavit or two and see where you go. The longer you wait, the better it is, though, because there's not much justice on this side of devolution. Most cases that I've got do have going on right now, I'm not expecting to really get anything positive on it, at least not before the year is out. But by the time devolution plays out, we'll have courts of justice. I do believe that. Otherwise, we still have the same crooks in play. So they got to be gone. And we're going to lose a lot of people who are going to disappear through military judicial processes and also common law processes. And, you know, National Liberty Alliance, under the name, working with many, many other people, coming in as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, is going to be focusing in on bringing justice back into the federal courts, and then all the state courts will follow suit. They'll have no choice because it's an easy process at that point. But it's going to take some time before we can do a lot of this stuff because courts are corrupt. All right, I guess that's the best I can offer right now. But working on a case now, gathering your evidence, and waiting a little while longer is probably better than jumping in too quickly. All right, next question.
Okay, I very much appreciate knowing some ideas or strategies to establish a court of record, aka common law, into an already proceeding case. Brief background. Attorneys who claim to represent a trust filed an unlawful detainer case against an erroneously named defendant. I challenged jurisdiction with an affidavit. The court judge and attorneys did not prove jurisdiction by rebutting, or counter challenge my affidavit. Motion for summary judgment was granted. I filed a lawsuit against the attorneys and the judge. Attorneys immediately filed an anti-SLAPP motion stating their action is protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. And the motion was granted, dismissing the case in its entirety with prejudice. I filed an appeal in the Court of Appeals in California. I am now writing an appellate's brief, but I did not explicitly establish a court of record prior. Question 1. I am thinking of stating court of record with a footnote under the Statement of Jurisdiction section of my brief. Does it sound reasonable or any other strategy I should consider? Question 2. Based on my understanding, we control corporations, officers of the court, judges, attorneys, DBAs, esquires by statutes, but they don't control we the people by statutes. Therefore, I should be able to use the anti-SLAPP statute against them, but they should not have been granted anti-SLAPP motion against the sovereign and throw the entire case with prejudice. Is this correct? What Supreme Court case / common law / or statutory law can I use to reverse the dismissal of my case in its entirety with prejudice? I'd appreciate an idea or a direction I can explore.
All right, that's quite long and a lot of questions, but let me see.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, you did start off with a jurisdictional challenge and nobody went forward or anything with that? Is that what he said?
They challenged jurisdiction with an affidavit, and the court judge attorneys and did not approve jurisdiction by rebutting or counter-challenge my affidavit.
All right, well, here's the problem, okay? And look, because he's coming in, I presume he's coming in pro se, he's not a lawyer, and he's handling his own case, that's what it sounds like. That being the case, they should give him extra consideration, because when he put that affidavit in, the judge should have, he should have been informed that you have to do a notice of motion. You have to do a motion. And the judge should have at least have told him that, because he's coming in pro se. There's also, there is supposed to be some office in each of the courts that help, they're supposed to help pro se individuals, but they're not going to get involved in the case to see, and help them out to see if they find out they didn't do something, they did something wrong. So what they did is they took advantage of the ignorance, and we're all ignorant of this until we learn. But they took advantage of his ignorance because he filed an affidavit and it wasn't rebutted because it was a jurisdiction thing. They all just ignored it because he didn't move the court. You got to move the court. If you don't move the court and you don't make notice of the court being moved, then at that point, everybody's going to ignore anything you say if it's advantageous towards them to ignore it. So it's to their advantage to ignore it. Of course, it's all wrong because they know they're taking advantage of someone who doesn't know. But the proper way to do it is, first of all, you should have put together a paper. It could have been a challenging of the jurisdiction, and it usually should be done up front. Jurisdiction can be challenged at any time throughout the process, okay, even after the case is over. Once you realize that you were in the improper place, you can challenge that jurisdiction. So you could still kind of resurrect that. They may slap it down. unlawfully, because you do have a right to come in and challenge that jurisdiction, and the law is clear. It's clear in common law. There's been the Supreme Court rulings on this. We've got numerous Supreme Court rulings on this one. Once challenged, jurisdiction must be decided, which means there has to be a hearing. And when you write your papers, they got to rebut every point. And if they can't rebut every point, as soon as they're finished, you file a paper on all the things that they didn't rebut. And with that, you should have enough information to be able to then get the jurisdiction challenged and dismissed and cast out, whatever the case may be. Now, this sounds like a case where they opened, the pro se individual opened up the case, and you're challenging the jurisdiction that you're being brought into, so it's kind of weird from that perspective. But what you can do is move it to federal court for cause for denial of due process. Due process is the right to be heard in a court of law. We do talk about this in our courses, so you know we get more information there and details. If you don't have knowledge enough to be able to pursue these ideas that I'm throwing out and the procedures. Okay, now I had a lot of questions in that. Are there any other questions you can see in there, Jan, that I didn't cover in what I just said? If you can
take it off the end here.
Okay. All right, well, look, that's the primary point. The person wants to get justice. They want to go and do something about it. They have to challenge the jurisdiction, and they have to do it properly. The case, you got to be careful, because if the case is closed, you can't do much of anything other than open a new case. Also, once the case closes, because they put in it that prejudice in that. With prejudice means you can't open that case up no more at all. Also, if you don't respond in a short period of time, 20 or 30 days, depends on the court, and whatever court you're in, I guess, the rules and stuff, but you only have so many days to do something about it, so you have to act quickly or at least file notice of what you're going to be doing, and then you get more time. So, but anyway, that's about all I can say on that. Any other questions?
Yes, John. I'm sure that John Gerard and a lot of the listeners have heard the phrase Internet Bill of Rights circulated around and have maybe heard and seen it recently on X22 report and the Q post from the past. This Bill of Rights would supposedly occur through congressional legislation that would protect Internet freedom. I have many questions about this. Do we really need a second or supplemental Bill of Rights dedicated to the Internet, or do we really should we need a second or supplemental Bill of Rights dedicated to the Internet? Does our existing Bill of Rights extend to all forms of communication and protect Internet freedom already? If this transpires through an act of Congress, couldn't it later be repealed and therefore not be regarded as a right? Our rights are not supposed to be legislated. I'm sure most would have the same questions. Your comments, please.
Well, government doesn't do a very good job protecting our rights anyway. They seem to be kind of always trying to negotiate our rights away, like discussing our right of free speech and discussing our right to have a weapon or many, many other things. Our right of due process, they ignore it all. They don't protect it so well, so that's not going to work out too well, number one. Number two, I don't want anyone to decide for me what my rights are. I'll let them know what my rights are. The bottom line is this. You have liberty and freedom to speak your piece anywhere in the world you go, you know, anywhere in the nation, anyways. We're supposed to be protected here. But in any event, if you're in the streets, you can, you know, bring forth your point of view and say whatever you please. The only thing that would be problematic if it was, you know, foul language or a foul situation, you know, inappropriate things. Other than that, you know, which I'm trying to think of a better word. Now, I'll think of a better word. I'll let you know. But the bottom line is this. Whatever you can say, if you're in a mall talking to people, if you're outside the mall, maybe handing out tracts or some literature on something, or speaking to people as people come in and out, or even in the mall itself, no one can stop you from doing that. Now, they do try to stop you. I've been many times, I've been in malls involved in different activities, and people come up and they call the cops and go through all this stuff and make my argument. It's been many years since I've done that, but in any event, they don't have the right to shut you down. It's the marketplace. You could say, do anything you want as long as you're not foul. Okay, I guess that's the best word to use. And that extends right onto the internet. We don't need a Bill of Rights. You know, there was an interview not long ago with Musk, and I kept going back and forth with this guy. Matter of fact, a lot of people saw this particular interview. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He just signed a contract up with Musk to go onto Twitter, and he was going to get some program going. And then after that interview, he just got rid of the contract, told the guy to take a hike. But the bottom line and the argument that was really being placed was trying to get him to admit or agree to certain restrictions. And he was quite clear, look, we're not here to make decisions on what people say, think, or do. It's all their business, whatever it is, as long as they're not bringing anything that ultimately I'll describe it as being foul, okay? You can't bring in pornography, okay? You have, unfortunately, I truly think that you shouldn't be able to curse either. It's my opinion. I think there should be proper places for that kind of thing, where children don't come in on it. But again, that's going to be pretty difficult to try to control. But that's only my personal opinion. But clearly, you don't want to put, you know, pornography is not permitted in certain things. And that's it. It's very simple. Once you put somebody in charge of deciding what your liberties are and deciding what your free speech is, you're going to lose a lot of free speech and lose a lot of liberty. And that's the end of that. So, no, you have a right to think, do, and say anything you want, any way you want, including on the Internet, as long as it's not foul. And I guess that's about it.
Okay, next question. I'm trying to get a 5-star passport. They're making it harder and harder to get a live birth certificate or fill out a DS-11 passport application.
Hold on.
It now says, yep.
Yeah, he said a live birth certificate. Let's try.
A live birth certificate.
When you get born, you get a certificate. Not that I'm happy with it. Is that what he's talking about, do you think?
Well, they have two, apparently. I forget which one you get at the hospital now before they let you out. when I was born, that was long ago. But yeah, you left. That's how they reduced the national debt.
I think they have a misplaced adjective. It's a certificate of live birth, not a live birth certificate.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Well, still, nevertheless, it's still a birth certificate. I don't understand why anybody would have a problem getting that if they're born here.
There are two types. There's one that's a short form, and there's one that's a long form. The long form is considered the certificate of live birth.
Okay, I have no knowledge of those things. But go ahead with the question. I don't think I'm going to be able to answer this question, but go ahead, finish reading it.
Okay, it now says you can't use the DS-11 if you've had a passport in the last 15 years. Can I still drive without a driver's license if I don't have the coveted 5-star diplomatic passport?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about something similar to this, about driving without a license or something. But you look at it, if you don't have a license or some kind of other thing, I guess what is it that he's got? He's got a passport of some kind that gives him some ability to drive or something, like a driver's license also, maybe as a foreigner. I don't understand what's going on with number one. Again, I don't know much about, as far as birth certificates or anything. And as far as having some kind of a paper that you no longer could get renewed and be able to drive on that, if you don't have a driver's license, you're going to have a problem. Not that you should, because driving is a liberty. It's a freedom we have. but they've licensed it, and they will put you in jail if you anger them enough. So you got to be careful with that.
May okay. I push that in?
You go ahead. I guess that's Jason talking. Who was that talking?
No, my name is Sam Smith.
Oh, okay. That was me that was mentioned the
probably the one that put
two different
the,
type of
you asked the question. Are you the one that
No, I was just listening to you speak, and I just had a comment.
Okay, yeah.
Is that
you,
a problem? Is that the right way the forum is?
No, that's okay, because we haven't opened up Q&A, which.
Oh, okay. No, it's just a specific topic you were talking about. It's very interesting. I would suggest that the individual, if his name is Jason.
No, it's not me. It's not me.
Okay. I would suggest do not act as the king if you don't understand what contracts you have signed. Do not go around driving without a driver's license and expect not to have any trouble till you understand the validity of the things you're trying to accomplish.
Okay, appreciate it. And your name is—you're coming up as Samuel. Is that your name?
Yes, sir. Sorry, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I hop in every once in a while. You guys have a lot of informing topics and conversation, and I'm very interested in your discussions. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's just you were talking about DS-11s and certificate of live birth and long form birth certificate and all these things that are ideas. That are really good for people to get informed on, but I would not go moving forward in any actions unless you understand what you're doing. And I'm not saying you're trying to tell people to do that. It's just, yeah.
All right, well, we do appreciate your input, and you're not interrupting, so. Okay.
Thank you. Let's go on.
Thank you. Let's go on. Any other questions there, John?
Yes, we have one more for you, John. We have reached out to our county assessor's office twice now, as John has suggested, in lieu of going through the entire land patent process to request our property be reclassified as private and not as real residential. We have had no response, among other things, and want to know what actions process is to take next to demand correspondence. Is reclaiming and securing full ownership of private property something that NLA plans to expound on in the future?
Well, again, private property can't be taxed, and if you can change it from residential to private property, you'd be taken off the tax rolls. They don't want to do that. They're ignorant to that. They don't know. The people that you're talking to, even the clerk maybe, they don't even know about this stuff. It's just the way it is. So it's an uphill battle. You've got to work your way up. And I made this point when I've mentioned this a few times because the topic has come up. And it is an uphill battle. You're going to fight the tooth and nail. And even when you get up the line to the people that do understand this, they're going to fight you anyway, unless you're lucky, but you'll probably fight you. And then you'll have to take it into the courts. Not that necessarily the court's going to help you because, again, you know, they're going to maintain status quo because they're all corrupt. And I don't know that there's anything going on out there in any of these courts that's not corrupt. It's just a lot of corruption. So it's an uphill battle. But as far as the future is concerned, yeah, we get on the other side of, look, at everybody knows, okay, you can't tax someone's property. Under common law, it's not possible. It's if your property is taxed and you own it, if you paid for that property and you claim to own that property and they're taxing you, and if you don't pay that tax, they're going to take that away from you, then you don't own that property, okay? That's a slave tax. Okay, it's unlawful. So once we get on the other side of devolution, it's got to disappear. And the money that goes there goes to various places. It certainly doesn't go anywhere to help the people. Just like the SESQ accounts, doesn't help the people. It seems that everything looks like it helps the people, but it doesn't help the people. It just helps to line their pockets with a lot more green. That's all it does. So again, I would just, it's going to fix itself. By the time we get to the next year, by 2025, and when Trump takes office and all these corruptors are, you know, arrested and whatever has to happen to them in court of law, once that's in the process, then property tax will no longer be anything that could be applied. They may continue for a while trying to apply it, but once we get just courts, you'll be able to beat it in court. And they'll have to cease. Eventually, they'll fall away, a lot of these different things, because they won't be able to afford to continue, you know? So, anyway, that's where we're at with that. Okay, that's the last one?
Yes, that's the last one, John. You're all done.
All right, I want to share something I just had to deal with this past week. Some weeks ago, on a Monday night call, you can find this page here. It's a Monday night open forum. I got it open on my desktop right now, concerning town, village, traffic, and administrative courts. And so if anybody hasn't, if anybody missed that one and they're interested in how to deal with these code violations in these courts, you'll probably want to, review this particular Monday night meeting. Now, this is found under today's issue. You come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and we're pretty much posting most of our open forums now up on both YouTube and Rumble. I was just putting up just certain ones, but now I think we're going to put them all up there. We're going to get one out every week. But anyway, if you come to that page, today's issues, NLA Monday Open Forum, there's also a link under Monday Night Call. Up in the top, you'll see videos, and you can click on that, and you'll go to this page. But if you come down 1, 2, 3, 4, number 4, that's where it is, administrative courts. Now, I want to follow up on this because we went through showing how you could write papers dealing with challenging the jurisdiction. And it is extremely important, absolutely greatly important, that you have to come into these courts under a special appearance. The special appearance is like a carte blanche to move into the higher court to get your hearing without a problem. Other than that, you have to get approval. And who do you think is going to approve you to go into another court to be heard concerning a jurisdictional challenge? So you have to be very careful. You also want to make sure you open up a court of record. So I want to share with you what happened. I just had this ticket, and that was the papers I filed was what I shared in this particular Monday night program. And I sent my paperwork in, and they responded with this. I've never seen this. This is something new to me. I don't know if anybody else is aware of this. Once we look at this, you can let me know, that you've also gotten something like this. But when I filed my papers, I responded, okay, with a special appearance, okay. I also came into the court to let them know who I was and what I was doing, and then I filed a paper challenging jurisdiction, okay. So all of that was filed at the same time. And almost a month later, 3 weeks or whatever it's been, they send me this letter, okay? And it says here, and it doesn't even refer to any of my paperwork, so they've already started committing crimes. They either buried my paper or they removed it from the file, and that's a crime. And if a judge is involved in that, that's 20 years in jail, by the way, for the judge. Okay, please be advised that your mail-in plea has not been mailed into the court. And that's not true. I mailed papers in, but it is true that I didn't mail a plea. Please sign and mail in the plea and return it to this court before the above date. Failure to return your ticket or to contact this office. Let me make this bigger if I can. Hold on. Yeah, there it is. Okay, failure to return your ticket or to contact this office before the above date. I'm not sure what date it was. I think it's next month, 8th or something like that, may result in the suspension of your driver's license. Now they're threatening me. A privilege to drive, threatening me again, pursuant to whatever section they put out, has nothing to do with me. Okay. The Department of Motor Vehicles will notify your home state to suspend your license, another threat. Should you be stopped in New York State while your privileges or license is suspended, you are subject to arrest. Another threat, okay, and will not be permitted to drive the vehicle from the arrest site. Conviction of driving while your license is suspended or revoked carries a mandatory fine and is a criminal offense. It now becomes a criminal offense, which will give you a criminal record. Now, that's amazing, all over a traffic violation, okay? So, and then it's signed by the judge. So this is a game they figure. I don't know whether they learned from dealing with people who have approached this the way I did or similarly the way I did. So that may be a new thing they're teaching in the court, in the judges in these nisi prius courts, which is administrative courts, or the prosecutor and the judge came up and they came up with this idea: let's send him a letter, let's stick him in, let's force him to make a plea. We'll get jurisdiction over him. So what I did, okay, and this I'm going to post this up on the site. Well, we posted the paperwork on our last meeting. I'll show you where that is in a minute. But anyway, what I did is I moved it to state court. Now, we've always spoken about moving it to federal court, but on a traffic violation, something on the administrative level, they could possibly push you back to deal with this first on the state level. And it makes a lot more sense to deal with it on the state level because they're more ignorant on that end, but they're also not as fearless as they are on a federal level. So I would start off, and this is what I did. I wrote a paper going into the New York State Supreme Court here in Dutchess County. That's the state court in my county. We call it the New York State Supreme Court. And on this paper, I'll post this so people can, you know, use it however they want. But you need to put your name in here. You're the petitioner, okay? Jurisdiction, key thing. Court of record, okay? You see the footnote, a court of record, according to Black's law, is proceeding according to the course of common law, okay? That's what a court of record is. So now I've already, it's in the paperwork, okay? And also the idea when you file papers, one of the people of New York, okay, that gives you power and authority as a sovereign, so you don't have to go into the other language that they go ballistic on and have heart attacks and strokes because they don't want to hear those things. So you're coming in a way that they're not even really understanding what you're doing, but you're protecting your jurisdiction. You're protecting, you know, what you're doing in the court and what your interests are. So I'm going to read through this, okay? My name, one of the people of New York, hereinafter petitioner in this court of record, hereby gives notice of the removal from the above said court of origin to the above said state court in the interest of justice for cause pursuant, here in New York, it's pursuant to NYC, New York City Code, subsection 19C. And you want to put the originating court, this is a town court where the ticket was issued, okay? And it goes, whereas collectively, Judge Dennis E. Smith, Prosecutor William Grady, and Court Clerk Carolyn Hockett Road, hereinafter respondents, violated plaintiff's right of due process protected by Amendment 5 of the U.S. Constitution and New York Constitution Article 1, Subsection 6, Paragraph 2, when respondents concealed or removed petitioner's jurisdictional challenge. Petitioner, being a natural person, having no prior agreement with any government agency or commercial activities, preserves jurisdiction stated above. Okay. This action at law is founded upon a denial of plaintiff's unalienable right of due process protected by the U.S. Bill of Rights, Fifth Amendment, and the Seventh Amendment, New York State Constitution, Article 1, Section, Subsection 2, and Subsection 6. Black law defines due process of law, stating, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law or law of the land and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. By the law of the land is more clearly intended the general law, a law which hears before it condemns, which proceeds upon inquiry, and renders judgment only after trial. Law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice is due process. Town courts are not courts of record, but are in fact nisi prius courts, which means unless first, thereby requiring a plea in order to give jurisdiction to said court. Whereas petitioner has not pleaded and responded by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the nisi prius Stanford Town Court. Now, this is very important because, you see, you have to be able, when you go into any of these courts, you always go in under special appearance. It preserves your rights, and it's even coded, okay? I mentioned the code a little earlier, that you can come into it states that you can come into challenging jurisdiction in a higher court, but only if you've preserved your rights, okay? They may let you go through, though, because it says in the law that it has to be approved by one of the judges, and the judges are not going to give you any of your unalienable rights. They're not interested in that. That's destructive to their whole crime process that they got going there. So anyway, so you have to make sure that you come in and you challenge that jurisdiction, and you come only by special appearance. The moment you make a plea, guilty or not guilty, they got you. You're caught, you're in the trap, you can't get out. Under common law, you can, because the whole thing is a fraud. But they don't see it as a fraud. They're not going to entertain it as a fraud. They're not going to consider it as a fraud. They're just going to kick you out and just ignore you. And you can complain and moan and to anybody. It's not going to get you nowhere. But doing it the right way, they may still kick you out and ignore you, but you've preserved everything. And when justice returns to the courts, and I do believe in my heart that justice will return to the courts after devolution. Okay, so thereby challenging personam jurisdiction over the petitioner, see verified jurisdictional challenge dated March 25th, 2024 attached. The following federal and state courts' decisions all agree that once jurisdiction is challenged, they must prove they have jurisdiction. And then I quoted some of these cases. Once challenged, jurisdiction cannot be assumed. It must be approved to exist. Again, jurisdiction once challenged cannot be assumed and must be decided. Again, the law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on the record of the administrative agency and all administrative proceedings. Courts must prove on the record all jurisdictional facts related to the jurisdiction asserted. And the last one, the law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on a record of the administrative agency and all administrative proceedings. And also all confirmed that when challenged, jurisdiction must be documented, shown, and proven to lawfully exist before a cause may lawfully proceed in the courts. So we're moving this case from a town court, which is an E.C. Prius court, to a state court, which is supposed to be a court of justice, and they are proceeding according to their own statutes. The statutes provide for this thing, and it requires an argument, and then it requires a decision. So if you write a paper like this, they have to come in and make sure you put numbers on the side, line numbers. I do it every 5 lines. So, but in any event, once you put this on paper, they have to respond to every single thing in this paper, okay? And the paper particularly that's attached to it was the challenge of the jurisdiction. That's what they have to respond to, point by point by point. And they can't beat that paper because it's all filled with laws. It's filled with statutes. It's filled with, Supreme Court rulings, state Supreme Court rulings, U.S. Supreme Court rulings. You know, there's a lot of things that they just can't get around. So once you lay that all out, they can't rebut it. And if they try to rebut it, you know, it'll be illogical. The point is you should win on paper. Not saying you're going to, because the judge may be, too invested in the status quo to allow you to get by. Maybe a lot of pressure put on them. I don't know, whatever the case may be. But these are lower cases. You know, they're not expected to be seen as much as the more other cases, dealing with Supreme Court decisions. But in any event, okay, I go on and... this is only 4 pages, by the way. Reason for moving to state court, okay? This move was triggered when respondents, and this is laying out the process, the problem. This move was triggered when respondents collaborated to ignore petitioner's jurisdictional challenge and force a plea on the threat of suspension of petitioner's privilege to drive and threat of arrest, which would be catastrophic to petitioner's ability to provide for his family's well-being. See letter from originating court dated April 8, 2024, which we read, that's attached. Whereas, in fact, the right of the citizen to travel upon the public highways and to transport his properties therein, either by carriage or by automobile, is not a mere privilege which a city may forbid or permit at will, but a common right which he has under the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then we quote the court case. In effect, as per the Supreme Court decision in the case Crandall versus Nevada, it was decided that speed limits and other traffic control devices being non-fact-based are simply an unlawful tax or impost on travel, and thus unconstitutionally for the reason cited. Clearly states, licensing is, Colorado Article 42-2-101 clearly states, licensing is for commercial drivers, not private citizens. Therefore, another Supreme Court ruling, I think this is a U.S. ruling, the right to travel is part of the liberty of which the citizen cannot be deprived without due process of law under the Fifth Amendment. And that was Kent versus Jules, and that was a U.S. decision. Where activities or enjoyment natural and often necessary to well-being of an American citizen, such as travel, are involved, we will construe narrowly all delegated powers that curtail or dilute them. To repeal, we deal here with the constitutional right of the citizen. Okay, so petitioner filed a notice of special appearance, a notice of motion. And these are papers if you're going to go in a traffic court or any kind of a code violation, any administrative court, you want to come in with this process here. You want to file a notice of special appearance, okay? Anybody who's been in court, every time a case opens up, lawyers file their letter of appearance, letting it know, I'm appearing in this case, representing so-and-so, here's my information, here's my contact, and then they move to the next step to file paperwork. So first order of business, and I file all these papers at the same time. Notice of special appearance, number one. Notice of motion, and that notice of motion is concerning the challenging of the jurisdiction. A verified jurisdictional challenge, that's the third paper, and a file on demand, which is given to the court clerk to notify them not to hide it, not to bury it, not to remove it, because that's a crime you go to jail for. So let me read this. Petitioner filed a notice of special appearance, notice of motion, a verified jurisdictional challenge, and a file on demand given to court clerk Carol Hawkenrode, notice of law to file. Respondents concealed or removed petitioner's filing. They act as if it didn't even exist. So they concealed it or they removed it, one or the other. So the respondents concealed or removed petitioner's filing from the court for record in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 1512, 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071, 18 U.S.C. subsection 17525, 17505, and 17520, whereas petitioner directed clerk Carol Hawkenrode to timestamp petitioner's jurisdictional challenge and return it to the petitioner in the provided self-addressed stamped envelope. As a substitute, court clerk Carol Hawkenrode, Judge Dennis E. Smith, and prosecutor William Grady colluded to remove or conceal petitioner's jurisdictional challenge and threatened the petitioner with suspension of license, arrest, and a criminal record if petitioner does not comply with a plea, thereby denying petitioner's right of due process by challenging personam jurisdiction. And then I put C, letter from the originating court dated April 8th. Again, it's the same paper I read. Whereas the law requires that if any tribunal finds absent of proof of jurisdiction over a person or subject matter, the case must be dismissed. When it clearly appears that the court lacks jurisdiction, the court has no authority to reach the merits. In such a situation, the action should be dismissed for want of jurisdiction. Okay, wherefore, now I decided not to sue for money, just to sue, really to shut the case down, because I think you have a better case. If I have to move this to federal court, I'm suing for money. I'm suing all three of these people, and I'm going to sue the state judge, there wouldn't be a prosecutor in that because it would be these three individuals represented by a lawyer. I'll sue the lawyer and I'll sue the judge. I bring it into federal court. That's when I move it to federal court for cause, suing for a constitutional violation, and that's where I'd go for money. But on this one level, It's not costing you to move the case. It shouldn't cost you anything to move the case from the administrative process into a state court for a decision for challenging of jurisdiction. So there shouldn't be no problem with that. It shouldn't cost you anything. And really, you want to shut the case down and even teach these people, because if you get another ticket in that area again, they're going to let you go right away, because they're not going to want to go through this aggravation again. And I would let them know, if we're going to have to go through this aggravation, I'm suing for money on day one, period. But, of course, you got to be careful, because that's kind of threatening them, so I'd be careful on how I would couch that kind of a conversation. Anyway, wherefore, a petitioner moves the court to hear and decide petitioner's jurisdictional challenge and dismiss the case for lack of personam jurisdiction. See petitioner's original filing challenging personam jurisdiction, consisting of file and demand, one-page notice of special appearance, one-page notice of motion, verified jurisdictional challenge, 8 pages, all dated March 25th, 2024, and commercial code violations also attached. Sealed, your name, and notarized. Okay? So that's something, it's something I've just thought about recently. Maybe we should pursue the state first before you go to federal court. This gives you a lot of bites out of the apple, so to speak, because you could take this right to the appeal court in your state, and then there's another appellate court above that, so that's two. And if you're just going to collect more and more people to collect more money for it if you want to move it to federal court. Also, it takes you more time because it's kind of late in the season as far as, the end of the game for these people, you know. But, being able to hold a case open if you know you're not going to get anything done justly, it's better off to push it as long as you can so you can get to the other side of the, you know, goodness, what's the other name? Devolution.
It just occurred to me. I don't know why I hadn't caught it before. This is a petition to the government for a redress of grievance.
Correct. It's exactly what.
First Amendment right.
And it's more than that, because there's a lot of laws requiring that jurisdiction must be proven. Has to be proven. And jurisdiction on every administrative process, they have to put the jurisdiction on it. None of them do it. They don't do that. Okay? So, yeah, there's a lot here that really is very helpful that people can use. That's in the law, in the constitutions, both state and federal. Supreme Court rulings, both state and federal. So there's a lot of stuff here. So anyway, you build your case and you do it, you go forward with it, and then you can pursue it over to the federal court. But again, you got a lot of bites at the apple. Okay, you got moving it into state court. You can move it up the appellate process into the appeal process. You can then move it into the federal court, and you can move that to the appellate process and even to the United States Supreme Court, where you can get a decision that you could be heard there.
And if they try and do the same thing to this one and just put it in the round file and ignore it, then you have a constitutional case.
Well, the moment they deny you due process, you have a constitutional case. It must be heard. The United States Supreme Court must hear it. Now, it may not be heard by the full body. It may be heard by only one of them, because they all have their own districts. I'm not too sure. I don't understand too much on how that process works going into the Supreme Court. I know Bob Schultz, We the People, has been in there numerous times. He just brought a case recently that he's arguing in the Supreme Court, and he's going to help me to move a case to the Supreme Court if it's necessary with a case I'm working on right now, which is an IRS case for someone else. But this paperwork I'm going to put up on our page. We'll put it up here under Education Starts Here. Come down to Law, okay? And you come down to Court Forms and Process. Now, all the paperwork that we had put out 4 weeks ago when we gave information on how to go into court and deal with code violation in these administrative courts, which is traffic court also, of course, okay, We put that information here. Let me see where we put it. Instructions and forms for traffic court. Okay, so everything's been updated here, and I'm going to put these forms here also. Okay, also for challenging the jurisdiction. But first, I think we're going to put in here for the state. You should go to the state jurisdiction first, and then you can move it over to the federal court if you have to. So you got like about 7 bites at the apple here. Definitely any kind of a traffic court violation that you're pushing through this process as of now, you won't get to the end of this thing until next year sometime. Devolution will be in play, and you won't have this problem. And even if you win it just by them falling out of time and being forced to open the courts of justice, well, that's fine too, you know. But in any event, just trying to beat them out. So we'll put it here, and of course we'll put it in our course, Court Access in the Common Law. We've also filed that paperwork there too. So those people who have taken the course, you know, they'll find the new information that we discover as time goes on right here. Forms for traffic court, and we just added this after the course. So we added it to March 29th, which we filed the papers and did that Monday program. I'll file the other papers here also concerning moving into state court. Okay,
was that case dismissed?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Was that case dismissed? That was for you, right?
Yeah, this is my case. I just filed the papers. Matter of fact, I just mailed them out today. I filed it with the state court, and I filed motions with these three individuals, a motion to move to into the state court for denial of due process.
I got a quick question about that. Is you possessing the driver's license not establish jurisdiction over you?
Absolutely not. How would that be?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Because
there's been no meeting of the mind between me and them concerning that, number one. They put me in a box, and I have my position at this point is I, from time to time, might drive something commercially, so, and I have in the past now.
Okay.
I have a license, and it's a great ID, so I have a license. It has nothing to do with me agreeing to any of that process. That's a fraud. Okay, and I know there's a way that they deal with this on the man on the land kind of stuff, you know, coming in as a sovereign citizen, using a lot of different language that it's kind of alien to them on the one hand, but they've become familiar with it, and they get angry. They see you as the enemy, and, you know, it could get a little dangerous because they'll hit you with the max of whatever they can give you with just because they hate you because you're bringing in and showing that they're unjust. Okay, so we don't teach to go that process. We'll use the law, the codes, the statutes, regulations, that's for them and for people operating commercial activity. All that has nothing to do with me. I'm under the law of the land, which brings me under the law of God. When I'm not under equity, I'm not under any legislative powers. They can't legislate anything about me. They can't legislate my rights. They can't legislate any process or requirement of anything that I have to do. They have nothing on me. That's all for, you know, again, people working in commercial activities or working for government agencies or as maybe a representative. They all fall under the statutes and stuff, but we don't.
If you're under common law, how come you're able to, in those papers, cite from the federal code, such as the USC?
Because it applies to them.
It's for them, and it's fine? That doesn't compromise?
Also, repeat the question again before I answer again.
How come you, the people of New York, and you're saying that you're only within the jurisdiction of common law? So when you use citations from the federal code, the U.S. code, or state code, that doesn't submit you to that jurisdiction because you're using it and citing it against them. That's what I don't know if that's clear enough.
That's correct. That's correct. And you can apply federal law because it's the law of the land. Okay,
like the U.S. Code or the CFR or the UCC?
Yep. You can use all that. Okay, and apply it to them. As you know probably, you know, the Constitution, we've given legislative powers, 18 legislative powers. The 18th power we gave them was the right to write law concerning the first 17. And we're very specific on what they can write, what kind of legislation they can legislate law. And it's very specific if you go through every one of them. It always has to do with something with commercial activities or with government agencies and agents. So it applies to them, and we will apply it to them, and we'll use it against them, and we'll force them by their own, regulations and statutes and so on, codes. Okay?
Yeah, thanks for answering. That was in regards to... I just joined NLA, so I'm just trying to get acquainted with all the semantics and everything. So that sounded...
Well, appreciate that.
Makes much sense. Like, it's outside of common law. It doesn't apply to people, but applies to them. But if I use it, that doesn't pull me, right? Doesn't pull me into
that. Yeah, that's not at all. No, it has nothing to do with being applied upon you.
Yeah. I did not mean to interrupt you. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, you should start really pressing in our educational tab and also our starter committee of safety. If you're not familiar with that, you should read with those two. We've got a lot to offer here for free education, and we have a lot to offer here on how to have government by consent on the grassroots level under starter committee of safety. Okay.
All right.
What we're going to do is we're going to go into an open forum now. So let me change the mode here. We're going to go over to Q&A. Okay. If anybody has a question or a comment or a correction or anything to offer here, just hit star 6 and a 1 if you're coming in on the phone to get into the queue. Or you can hit the button. There should be a button if you're coming in on an app to get into the queue. Right now there's no one in the queue. So... anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time to do it. Okay, we got Ross, the first person in the queue. Ross, you got the mic. What's your question or comment?
I have a disability. Does the Bill of Rights apply to me or person who has fully functional ability to do that?
I didn't get all of that. You have a disability. And what does what apply to you?
Does do I have the Bill of Rights, the rights from the Bill of Rights, even if I have a disability?
Absolutely, you have every right that I have. You have every right that the Constitution gives us. The Bill of Rights lists out a number of rights in the First Ten Amendments, which you have the right. But it's a lot more than that. Our rights extend further than that. It gets into common law. For instance, what we're talking about today, the right to travel. You can't license my right to travel. The right to marry. You can't license my right to marry. A lot of things they license because they're making money off of it, and because of our ignorance, we go along with it. So we need to become educated. As Jefferson said, people expect to be ignorant and free. They expect what never was and never will be. Go ahead.
I asked, like, my optometrist, my eye doctor, he said, I asked him, should I have K again? No, and he said, no, because I have... very bad vision.
Well, I can't decide that one way or the other. You'll have to figure that out. If you feel that you're able to be able to handle that with your bad vision, do you have glasses? Do you have corrective lenses that work well enough to be able to see well enough?
They don't correct to 20/20 vision.
What? How far the correction? I mean, well, look at a lot of times I wear glasses. Okay. I could walk around without my glasses on at all, but I wouldn't be able to read anything or anything fine. But I would be able to tell if some person is coming up onto me, attack me with my glasses off or on, and be able to deal with that person with a weapon. And if you feel that you can, you don't have to explain yourself to no one, and you can go get yourself a weapon. You feel confident with that.
My family don't want me to have a gun.
You have to work that out with your family. I can't get in the middle of that. They know you better than I do, and life goes on. And if they believe that your deficit is big enough that could create certain problems, and they still have some kind of control over you, and they got your you know, they got goodness in their heart for you. I'm sure it's not that they're just trying to restrict you for no reason, but you can show them over time and prove to them different. And so it's up to you over time to prove different.
It's not just a division problem. I think what my mom is, my response time is not quick enough because I have a autism and intellectual disability.
Yeah, again, these are issues that I can't answer. I don't have the ability to answer. But
I know.
I think your parents are probably have a good grip on your needs and try to work things out. Discuss it with them. And over time, you know, find out how you think you can improve, and they should be able to help you on that and see if you can't meet those goals. And if you can meet those goals, you'd be proving to your parents certain things, and they may agree. But I wouldn't ignore their advice.
Yes.
They know you better than anyone.
Give you one idea, Ross? And that is that if you can't draw your gun faster than the bad guy can draw his, your opportunity disappears. He sees it as a threat, and he blows you away. And that's not a position that you want to be in unless you know that you can draw fast enough to prevent it. So that might go into the thinking about what the situation is. Does that make sense?
Yes. There's also, I think, with my learning disability, that executive function is where that is probably why I have a harder time processing quick enough to respond to a bad guy targeting me.
And if you can't respond, what happens? If you can't respond fast enough, he comes over and he takes the gun away from you and he uses your own gun against you.
Yes.
That's not a good point.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really concerned about defending yourself because maybe in a bad neighborhood or something, or whatever the case may be, or, talk to your parents about Mace or something. You know, you can keep Mace in your pocket.
Yeah, I live in the country right now in Clackamas County. I don't have a bad neighborhood anyways, but...
Well, work on these things. You're going to want to work throughout your whole life trying to better yourself in different ways and build more knowledge and so on and so forth. And your parents will be good advisors to you, So.
Okay.
Okay, that it, Ross?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And by the way, we only want one question at a time, maybe with one follow-up, and if you have another question after you're in the queue and you come out, you can come back into the queue again. This way everybody can get through, because sometimes we go over and we can't get everybody. We had a meeting just recently. We're going to be closing at 11 o'clock, unless something really... an important reason not to, but we'll be closing up every evening at 11 o'clock on Mondays. Okay, thanks, Ross. We'll take our next question. Jason, you got the mic. Go right ahead. And by the way, Jason, what state are you in?
Florida.
Florida. Jason from Florida. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just a recommendation for, I think it was Ross. He was talking about self-defense. I'll recommend you check out, believe it or not, flashlights. There are all sorts of flashlights, especially when it comes for bright flashlights. They're surprisingly effective.
Well, that is, yes.
And they're accessible in most places, and people shouldn't give you a problem. Just don't go too tactical, but use for brightness. Brightness is definitely what you look for. So that would be my recommendation. You don't have to take it.
If you get a tactical one, they have those little ridges on the front. Use it as a weapon if it's necessary. Yeah, flashlight is a good idea.
Not a ranged weapon, but it's the light is effective, especially at night, I promise. But anyway, to get into my question, nice to meet you, John, again. I have a really specific question about jurisdictional challenging. I've been going through the website, learning as much as I can, studying. I even got the common law, government by consent and common law court, and purchased the videos and started watching through them.
The course?
Yeah, I got the course. I've been working through it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We're on equity. I know the learning about the difference between equity court and common law court. Mm-hmm. And you here today, you were talking about jurisdictional challenging. And the one question I have is that because as we learn, the courts are learning too, right? And they're dealing with things in different ways. And apparently, from what I understand, special appearances are beginning to fail more often than not. That is a little bit of a presumption on my end, but I come across some sources that are talking about that apparently under martial rule, judges can still do whatever they want, whenever they want, as long as they don't alarm the public or, as you say, disturb the status quo. And apparently, I wanted to ask you if abatement is a good and effective alternative route to challenging jurisdiction.
Well, absolutely. And again, jurisdiction, as far as challenging the jurisdiction, it is true they're going to do everything they can to not do it, okay? And I've been in a federal court challenging their jurisdiction, and they just ignored me. So the courts are evil. It's not that we're doing anything wrong. They're just doing everything evil. They're protecting the status quo. They're protecting the New World Order. And this is all done by the minions of the New World Order. And the minions of the New World Order are the bar attorneys. They're the one who has destroyed America. They started destroying the colonies back in 1750 and continued their process right up till today. And they've destroyed our political process. They brought in democracy, changed us from a democracy to a republic. They took away our ability, they statutorized the committees of safety, which is the committeemen. They statutorized them, put on party bosses. This is all done by law. This is all done by legislation. These people performed all this. They're the ones that put together the rules from the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, which took effect in 1938. Well, it was the bar attorneys that put this together. And they abrogated, under Rule 2, they abrogated the law of the land. They abrogated common law, and they claim to have put together common law and civil law, which is an oxymoron. It's like putting water and oil together. It just doesn't mix. Can't do that. One is legislative, the mind of man, and the other one is natural law, the mind of God. I'd rather be judged by the mind of God than the mind of man. And so they under Rule 2, they brought them together, and they called it civil law. And most lawyers that I spoke to, they claim, oh, common law, that's old-fashioned. We don't use that no more. That's been abrogated. We're under Roman law. And rightly so, they're saying the truth, that we are under Roman law. Roman law is Justinian law. Justinian law is Babylonian law. And all of that is the law of the city, municipality, the laws of the municipality law. So these are the people that destroyed, and they don't even realize it. I mean, the higher up levels do, because they're working together to destroy the republic. They're working to get rid of our constitution. They're working to enslave us. They're working to reduce the population, and it goes on and on. This is the problem we have, and this is what we're up against. As a matter of fact, the original 13th Amendment will get rid of them, so we're going to apply that and pursue that in the courts as soon as devolution plays out.
Okay. Do you think that abatement is a more effective process to to establish your authority and also potentially
I mean, again, what you want to do, look at, there is codes requiring them to participate and do things in a particular way when you challenge jurisdiction. There's codes for that. There's statutes. There's Supreme Court rulings. There's state rulings. So if they don't have jurisdiction, I don't want to talk about anything. You know, you go to federal court, I don't want to talk about why I'm here as far as the original case, what that is all about. That has nothing to do with this. If they violated my right of due process by denying me the jurisdictional challenge, then that's against the law, and they have to cease and desist. It doesn't matter what the case is about.
Okay, so that's what abatement is, more of an argument of fact.
Say that again?
An abatement is an action that... I'm trying to also understand abatement, because I understood, as I studied challenging jurisdiction, when it comes to abatements, it seemed like a preliminary, something you can do on paper, as you some papers you can file with a court. The definition I'm going by, let me see, the abatement of an action at law is the overthrowing of the action caused by a defendant's pleading some matter of fact tending to impeach the correctness of the writ or declaration. And I was wondering if, first of all, if abatements are effective, and then, of course, I see the word pleading here, and we, when we're challenging jurisdiction, we don't want to plead at all. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely don't want to make a plea. Okay. Once you make a plea, you're done. Okay? But again, you know, you can still beat that out because the whole thing is a fraud. But that's going to make it a lot harder to get, dig yourself out of that hole. So you don't want to go there. But here, destruction of abatement of nuisance, you know, you can refer back to 16th American jurisprudence, the second section 114. And it says here, as to the construction with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law still permitted the destruction of the abatement of nuisance. So if it's a nuisance, and all these administrative courts are nuisances, by summary proceedings. So what it's given you is the power and the authority to move these things to a summary proceeding. So when you move to a summary proceeding, you're moving away from the, you're moving away from going into court with a jury, and you're now pushing the case over to say to the judge or to the magistrate, Mr. Magistrate, you can put on your judge hat right now and rule on this particular thing, okay, this situation. But you know they're not going to rule the right way. That's why I wouldn't go that route. There's a lot of things they have to, a lot of hurdles they have to go over to go and go pursue you through the jurisdictional challenge. But let's finish reading this. So an important canon of construction is that the Constitution must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisance by summary proceedings. And it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. In other words, summary proceedings are unlawful in a court of law. Okay, there is no summary proceedings if you're in a court of law.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So anyway, so it's the principle, and although there is no common law of the United States in the sense of the national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. Now, this American jurisprudence is extremely important because this is jurisprudence, and this is what the judges are supposed to act upon. Okay, the jurisprudence, which brings them back right under the common law, even the legislative
okay, jurisprudence law, is case law, right?
Huh?
Jurisprudence. The American jurisprudence is the encyclopedia of law, and it contains all the Supreme Court case laws,
yes,
right?
It's a collection of common law decisions that judges okay. are supposed to abide by. Okay? Now, it has been polluted. Considerably has been polluted. But 16 American Jurisprudence Section, Second Edition, Section 114, okay, particularly, is in good shape. But, you know, they put tax in there, you know, income tax. They put all kinds of stuff in there under different titles, okay? But you see, all of legislative law is still supposed to be under common law. In other words, it's still governed by common law, which is common sense. So, okay, with that, we've got to go to the next caller, though.
Thanks for the answer. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to go to Chicago now, Illinois. Tizoc, am I saying that right? T-I-Z-O-C? You got the mic. From Chicago, Illinois. Kazak.
Sorry, John, I just went off my headphone. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, you can? Okay, great. So just a handful of really quick points. Number one, I think the first or one of the first callers was questioning about jurisdiction, and I think he tried to repeat something that you said about being one of the people, but I think the language that the caller used was you being the people. So I just wanted to make the distinction between identifying as a people, singular, versus the people, right, the body politic. So
yeah, again, one of the people as a, right. As a full right. Good.
Yeah, it's a pretty big distinction. And I've had that happen to me in court where a judge stops me. It's like, wait a second, so you're the people? And then I say a people and, you know, clear the air. So second, that same caller had a question about using a third-party law or positive law and still not being subject to that jurisdiction, even though you're using that law. And I wanted to comment on that because as a sovereign, and there's great precedent establishing this, it is the sovereign that declares the law. So it is also generally true that the king is subject to their own rules or laws. So in this case, you can pick and choose certain laws from different jurisdictions and say, hey, according to me, because I'm the king, these are the laws that I think are fair, right? And it could be up to another party to judge whether those laws are fair or not. But that doesn't mean that you're subject to everything else that is tied to that kind of jurisdiction or other laws. I know I didn't probably explain that well, but that's one of the reasons why you're not subject. A third point, I think, and this has to do with Ross, who I believe has identified earlier as, at least for tax purposes, as a ward or a dependent. So I think legally that can be an issue with some of the things he was kind of asking about, but I just want to touch on that lightly. An update in Chicago. So on the NLA website, I'm identified as a committee of safety leader. We've been meeting every few weeks, just a few of us trying to get this ball rolling for a committee of safety in Cook County. So just kind of letting people know, if you want to reach out, please do. And finally, another minor thing, municipal law, I understand, is also effectively corporate policy. So when you understand how you're a sovereign and you're not necessarily subject to corporate policies, you might understand how municipal rules or statutes, et cetera, might not have standing. So that's all I wanted to say quickly. I don't know if you have any questions for me, John.
Yeah, well, municipality law is civil law. It's the law of the city. The purpose is to control the slaves and fleece them for as much money as you can get out of them. I mean, that's the bottom line, as you destroy them, because they have no concern for the people. And that's where we're at with all these places. You know, law is constructive. We have to understand that. And when you go into a federal court, jurisdiction changes with the conversation. And that's why they can't really hear most cases. I mean, I've been pulled into the federal courts on cases that I've been suing people on, and they keep pulling me, you know, particularly like the IRS, agents of different agencies, you know, and they pull you into the federal courts, but then they can't really go anywhere with it. I've frustrated them, and they certainly frustrate me, but I frustrated them because they that has nothing to do with us. You know, they moved to, you know, USC 18 and the 28 and the 26, 26 being the big one with the IRS and with the taxes. And, you know, and this, of course, is a problem. So law is constructive, but none of these things have anything to do with us. And that's why they don't have jurisdiction over us in federal courts. Again, there's very few things that they can actually hear. And just because an individual happens to be a federal agent doesn't give them the right or the authority anywhere in law or anywhere in the Constitution that it must be heard in a federal court. That's a conflict of interest because they're going to be there to protect them because they're, you know, they're one of their comrades, you know. So, again, it's a battle.
But I'll let you go because I know you have other people in queue.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, Tim. Thank you. Tim, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you from, Tim?
I was just calling.
Oh, hi. Yep, go right ahead. Give us your state, Tim. We're not hearing you. It sounds like you faded all the way in the background. Get closer to your mic or something. Is anybody hearing Tim? Tim, we're not getting you.
Yeah, I'm not hearing him either. It sounded like I hear a little bit of motion of his mic, but I can't hear.
He's faded somewhere, like the mic just faded out. Tim, last call for Tim. If we can't get you, we'll have to move on, and you can get back in to queue and try to fix your mic, maybe. Yeah, we're not getting you. Try to work on your mic, get back in the queue, and we'll pick you up a little later. Okay, we're going to go to Aldo, A-L-D-O.
John, can you hear me?
Yeah, first name and state.
Aldo in Virginia.
All right, go ahead, Aldo.
Thank you for your faithful service, sir. I'm a new member. I have an interesting open petition to restore accountability in Virginia that I filed. It's fairly unique, and I wish I had found you guys a long time ago, but here I am. I think with some wisdom from you and maybe a little help, it could take us a step towards devolution. It is was sent up to the Supreme Court of Virginia after all the local judges disqualified themselves. It is online at thecourtofpublicawakening.org. It's posted there. I am fighting the Assistant Attorney General of Virginia, who's an affable fellow, but nonetheless, his demur is posted, and waiting the Supreme Court of Virginia designated a retired woman judge out of Richmond for a hearing. And we're hoping to have a hearing sometime in June to not only pack the courtroom, but pack the courthouse. It's a unique document. I was hoping to get you to look at it and maybe have a little conversation with you about it. Do you happen to have internet access?
Well, I'm sure I do. how many pages is it?
It's 4 pages. It's right online.
Okay, send it to mail, M-A-I-L, 4 pages I can deal with, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and our leadership will get it. I'll get a copy. just make note that that there's something attached. Four pages.
Well, it's on a web page called courtofpublicawakening.org. I sent that link to Jan, so you can look at it. Anybody can look at it. It's for the public to see. I'm pressuring the court. I've run into the state bar mafia, I guess would describe the behaviors you're talking about, where the bar officers, including the judges, are just evil in a sense. Well, they lack accountability to the public, those they rule over, because when in Virginia, and I think this is in other states, there are about 5,000 complaints filed every year to the bar and the Judicial Review Committee, and every year about 83% of them are dismissed without any review. And in my open petition, it says if 83% of calls to 911 were met with a message saying we can't take your call or we're not sending help, we would slip towards chaos. And that's what's going on in our court. And it's that broken accountability. And by the way, all those complaints are withheld from the public. I have a whistleblower in the complaint who's afraid of the court because they have hurt her so badly. They've hurt the whistleblower so badly. But she used to work at the bar in Virginia and has evidence of them destroying complaints, politicizing them, and hiding them from the public. And it's an interesting tactic because I'm playing lawfully in their arena, but I'm coordinating Patriot actions to pressure the courts for We the People, for to give us a special grand jury to investigate these complaints, as well as the bar complaints that I have that were dismissed, and I have a small cadre of what I call white hat pro se's, others in the state who've been hurt by me, like I have, who have found, we found each other, and that hearing's coming up, and I think from what I've heard you talk, you could add a lot of wisdom. I have a demur from the Assistant Attorney General posted online at that website that I'm preparing a response for, and maybe there's some wisdom to try to shift it into the Supreme Court and get it more on record and get more presence there, more minds like yours to help guide the fight for We the People.
All right, well, look, at you know, I think I've seen something of what you're talking about recently, and it might have been, I might have looked at a web page, maybe that came, maybe Jan sent it to me or something, and but I didn't look deep enough. I get, if you want to send it again, send it to the link to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll keep an eye out for it, and I'll look into it, and we could talk again about a little bit about this next week, and maybe we can work together on it. You know, I don't know, are you familiar with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury?
I am, and actually, I'll go one step further. There was a paper written by, hold on a second, the Law Review article written by Professor Brenner, A Case for Grand Jury Independence, The Voice of the Community. It's about 20 years old, and it talks about the federal and the state grand jury system and the pitfalls and the opportunities there for the community for it to be restored as the voice for us. Because, as you well know, in the state code, like in Virginia, I legally applied on behalf of We the People and myself for the court to appoint a special grand jury, which has investigative powers. But the rules that operate the grand juries are local usually, and they're very loose. And what happens is you get the Commonwealth's Attorney in Virginia who influences and guides the grand jury, so they get their preferred outcome. It's that state bar mafia mentality. Okay, well, you're in our system, and you know we control the rules, or we ignore the rules selectively and do what we want. But I've jumped track on that. I think you'll see the wisdom in that in the petition itself. And we're going to put that in the demur and reference her paper and say we want open access to the grand jury for them to be independent, not biased by the Commonwealth attorney or any bar officer, and we want them to have access to the dismissed complaints to investigate them, and we want the grand juries by region, because it's all over the state, so they can call in and interview the complainants to hear their stories firsthand. And I offered all the details for my cases specifically, being the only petitioner who was willing to expose himself to the courts.
Aldo, yes, this is Terry. Have you read U.S. versus Williams 1992?
No, sir. I've been a little snowed in trying to get my arms around this U.S. versus Williams.
Yes, in landmark Supreme Court cases, John is, I think, going to go to it right there. The second one down, U.S. versus Williams, they're from the top. And it's highlighted. Just read the yellow parts if you don't have time. It'll only take you 10 minutes.
Okay.
And you do not have to ask permission to establish a grand jury. You just have to establish it. I would get your sheriff working for you if he's a constitutional sheriff and he understands his duties.
He's not, and let me tell you about that news. That is, I'm a candidate in Virginia Beach for a constitutional sheriff's position. The sheriff who was elected bowed out last year because of health reasons. He had been in office for three terms, almost 12 years, was known to be corrupt, but he was part of the good old boy system. They appointed, against some of the will of the people, they appointed one of his number two or three sheriffs, who's a nice guy on paper, but he toes the line for the system, doesn't challenge any of the system. In 2022, I got hired by the local sheriff's department to become a deputy sheriff until the judges found out and they yanked my ticket. So the week before I was supposed to start, actually, I passed all the physicals, all the mentals, all the background checks, signed the contracts, all that stuff, and then I get an email saying, we can't let you, you know, we have to withdraw. And that's in, so I have a web page called aldoforsheriff.org, and it's tied to the special grand jury petition request to restore accountability. And I did that to keep this issue present. One of the tactics and tools of the court, as you all well know, is they sweep matters under the rug, either by ignoring them or the matter gets lost in the minutia of the complaint. And in Virginia, only bar officers have online access to court document content. You as a citizen can go to the website and you can see a title listing of the document based upon what the clerk entered, but you can't see any of the content. And that's also in my petition, because those actions give monopoly control to these bar officers, and they give them control of the narrative, particularly in hearings and things like that. But I will, John, I thank you for taking my call. I'll send you the link. I hope to speak to you soon, preferably before next week, sir.
All right. Well, let me talk to you about a few things here. You know, I have, Jan was talking to me about you. I have been to your website. I think there were three pages or something. I took a look at three different sites, or pages, I'm not sure. And let me ask you a question or two first. Are you starting a committee of safety in your county?
I would love to. I just learned about all that concept, and if that can help. I think here's what I think we have an opportunity. There is a lot of efforts out there. You're familiar with the People's Restoration Operation, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name right now, Melissa or...
Mugnicki Clan.
Yeah, there's several things going on, and I was hoping that we could all kind of put our heads together, and your committee of safety tactic could be something I can do to help what I'm trying to do, and you can take a look at this petition and see the opportunity there for what you've been working on for over a decade to take us a step closer to devolution or to a step closer to being accountable to one another rather than these bar officers controlling us, because we're slaves. We are slaves to them, and whether you accept it or not, that's the reality of it.
All right, well, let me respond to some of these things. We are what's her name again, Terry? The one doing that, Terry, you there? No, maybe Terry left or walked away from the computer. All right, anyway, we are trying to make contact with her.
No, I was muted. Mugnicki Clan.
Mugnicki, that's it.
Mugnicki.
Anyway,
Michelle.
Trying to make contact with her, so we're kind of waiting on that. I've been wanting to make contact with you anyway because I spoke to Jan about you and he told me you were running for sheriff. We'd like to support you. And I'd like to go over just a few things, you know, as far as grand jury is concerned, okay? Underneath federal court cases, you come down to the three down, you click on grand jury, you'll come to this page. And these are federal court filings, all right? And the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, we started to establish that back a while ago. As Terry brought up, we were looking at United States versus Williams. And as Terry said, if you look through this and just read the yellow highlighted stuff, it's extremely powerful. Might be good to read the whole thing, of course, but this yellow stuff, really, there's a lot of ammunition here. A lot of things that are powerful and it helps to empower us. You can find that under federal court cases. You come down to landmark Supreme Court cases. You click on that link there, and you'll come to this page, and U.S. versus Williams is found there. Going back over to the federal, what we put together for our court filings, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, I'm reading here this, is comprised of 50 grand juries, each unified amongst the counties within their respective states. So every state organized a grand jury, a unified state grand jury. And all 50 states came together and was unified nationally as an assembly of thousands of people in the name of We the People to suppress through our courts of justice subverts acting under color of law within our government. And then the following are archived court cases in the federal district courts. Now, anybody that is really studying law and they're studying on court access and learning how to get into the courts, and we do have that course. You said you're in that course, didn't you, Aldo?
I haven't started it. You graciously sent me the free link because I'm a sheriff's candidate, and I appreciate that. I've just been juggling a small business and life and all this other stuff. I also have a federal case related to this that's on appeal. And I just got a notice today from the appellate court that they want me to submit my my summary brief by the end of the month, and I'm working with another organization you might have heard of called Our Country, Our Choice, trying to raise awareness and do this what I call lawful coordinated patriot actions to, you know, pack the not just the courtroom but the courthouse that day and whatnot. So,
all right, well, let me make these few points and then we've got to move on to some others and we'll talk some more. But the things we put together here with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is to bring the power and the authority of the people back into the courts, where no judges and bar attorneys is to approach a grand jury or a trial jury prior to the case. First of all, bar attorneys were working on a process to get rid of them using the original 13th Amendment for anybody who is aware of that situation. So we're going to use that to get rid of them. We're going to squash democracy by bringing back the republic. I know Trump is working on that, and we're going to be getting into the courts. We bring our courts back. We bring republic back into the courts. It'll then move through the entire government and into all the courts, all the way down into the lower courts. But the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is seating right now, dealing with cases that are, for individuals, foreign and domestic, that are destroying our nation. And we've done quite a few indictments and so on, but they haven't taken effect. We filed them in all the proper places and numerous other places. But anyway, at some point in time, they're going to have to be dealt with. And our cases prove a conspiracy again with all of the court justices, particularly on a federal level, of course, proving that there is a conspiracy to subvert our common law and destroy our courts of justice to bring in the civil law courts. So we're working on that. But the end results, we'll be bringing back the juries in every single county, common law juries, by building administrators. So that's something we're doing, an administration for the juries, where the people that are educated, and we educate them here at National Liberty Alliance, so people who are educated and take these positions is for the sole purpose to orientate the juries, to assist the juries, whether they're trial or grand juries, assist them to access into federal agencies, offices, looking in their computer, anything they want to do, because that's the power of the people. We can investigate and look into things. So we're working on that, all right, to bring those back. And we'd like to work together with as many people as possible that's working with and interested in that. You know, we're also, what was that guy's name? McGregor, I think it is.
McGregor, yes, sir. He's my boss.
Okay. Well, we're trying to make a connection with him.
I'm in that organization. I can connect you directly there. But I guess, you know, here's something, and I think you can...
Hold on. We've already signed up for that. I signed up for that in the beginning. We gave a lot of information on specific who we are, what we're doing, what we have available, you know, talked about all the books we authored.
You and I should talk offline about that. There's some back channel you need to hear, and I'll be happy to share that with you, but not in this forum. But I'll leave it with this. You know how our courts can use time as a weapon, as a sword and a shield. One of the new things about what I've managed to spark and where I'm at is that the judge and the assistant attorney general are agreeable to having a hearing in Richmond next month, which is a very short time.
We still have a few people in the queue, and we're getting late.
Yes, sir. Thank you, John.
We'll give you a call this week sometime, Jan and I and maybe Terry and a few others. We'll have a little conversation. Strategies.
I'll answer your question that about why you're not getting here back, and we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to our next person. Let's see, John from Michigan. You got the mic.
Hey, John. Thank you, John in Michigan here. Hey, just two things. You were talking about right to drive or what, and the driving is a privilege. That's the commercial aspect. You kind of hit on that, but all those cases you cited were cases on traveling. The difference. You can travel in any method you want, but driving is a legal term. A person in that case is a legal term. Driving and traveling are two different things. That was just one thing I wanted to say on that thing. But,
yeah, that's a game of words, though. They play with words. They change the meaning of things.
In Michigan, they have, it's all the driving laws about driving, stuff like that. I mean, they have the terms, the definitions for the terms in there, and a person is a commercial entity, okay? I mean, it's not a man or woman,
I understand the game, but that's a fraud. It doesn't mean that. A person means exactly what it means. We're one of the people. I'm a person. You can, you know, they try to change the meaning of things. And you know, look at, I remember when I first got into this, trying to understand things because I was having problems with the IRS. And I started reading the Constitution and looking into these things, and I started reading the USC 26, which is a nightmare of 1,000 pages, maybe a lot of pages. And matter of fact, if I recall, back then it was like 9,000 pages, I think. It was a lot of pages. But in any event, because you know, you can take this paperwork and you can start to do searches in the paper. And find everywhere certain phrases are used in words, you can build up, you can start to see very quickly what they did and what they, you know, different meanings. For instance, they've taken the 50 states, if you go into USC 26, and they call that the District of Columbia now. For these reasons and this, that, and the other thing, in order to interpret the game that they play. So we already puzzled through a lot of that, and I wrote a paper on that, which really brings it right back to them, that they don't have any power or authority to collect taxes. There is no law. USC 26 is not law anyway. In any event, it also, if you go into it and you dig down deep using their words, their meanings, you discover I'm not liable. I'm not liable for taxes. So, but it's a game they play with everything. Traffic court, in order to get the person into traffic court, which has to do with commercial activities, now, you know, they play this game to apply it upon you. And like you said, I wasn't aware of this one, but they call in a person, I guess, in what statutes are they calling a person some other kind of an entity or mean something else?
Well, no, in the vehicle codes in Michigan, whatever like that, they say any person is doing this or anything, and then they go back to the definition. In the definitions of those laws, it says right in the laws that a person is a corporation, public. The only thing it doesn't say man or woman. Okay, everything but a man or woman, and so it doesn't apply to the men or women. And if they wanted to apply to a man or woman, they would have said so. And since they didn't, it doesn't. But a person is a commercial thing. And if I'm driving a corporation's truck, I'm a person. I'm a driver. If I'm traveling in my own car, I'm a traveler.
Right, but here's the problem with that, though. I understand what you're saying. You're absolutely right. USC 26 does the very same thing. A person is a corporation, okay? So I understand what you're saying, but I don't comply. I'm not going to use the language. I'm not going to avoid that language. I may be careful with my language. I'll call myself one of the people instead of a person, but in any event, when they try, and they'll never debate this or argue this in court, by the way, by saying, hey, you're a person, you're a corporation, because it says here in the law here, this, that, and the other thing. They'll never do that. So I would never bring it up, and I wouldn't play with their language in the court. Just like, you know, I wouldn't use the word citizen in a court, although there's nothing wrong with being called a citizen. The word citizen is used 7 times in the Constitution, but they played a game with that word. And so to be a citizen means something else, so I won't use that word. I won't use the word person either because of the IRS USC 26, but now I have more reason. They've even copied that down into the administrative courts, particularly in the commercial code. But we got to be careful, and we don't want to play on in their sandbox when we go into courts. That's very important.
Okay. Well, there's one more person in the queue. I just wanted, if you get a chance to comment on it. I mean, all these demonstrations all over the country on people protesting what's happening in Gaza, and they're turning into an anti-Semitic thing or a pro-Palestinian thing. And I'm thinking there's 2.5 million people over in Gaza, and 1/3 of those are Christians. So there's probably what 700,000 Christians that are being murdered over there right now. I'm curious what your take is on how it's being reported in the papers and stuff like that. I mean, these the demonstrations on the college campuses, it reminds me a lot of Vietnam back in the 60s. But I mean, it's they're turning things around. I don't know if the lawyers are eating their own and what's going on in this thing, but I mean, I can, it's interesting to see what, I'll yield and I'll let you get to the last person in the queue here, because, but I just, if you get a chance to think about that, talk about that, so.
All right, yeah, well, we have three other people in the queue, but and I'm going to try to get to them all. We only got about 6 minutes, so, but nevertheless, you know, well, there's too much to comment on right now.
Right. It's too late, so. But do what you can do. I just threw that out there because, yeah, words are important. Words are important. They mean what they mean, and we oftentimes miss that.
Well, I try to be very careful with my wording in the papers that I write, and there are certain words I stay away from, so.
John, you do a great job of your footnotes and everything else. It's amazing, but I will say that. You do a lot better than I do, so thank you.
Okay, thank you, John.
You bet. Bye.
Okay, let's take our next caller. We're going to have to reduce to a couple of minutes apiece because it's late, and you know we'll be back next Monday also. But next caller, you got the mic, is 707 area code. Looks like California. What's your first name?
Okay. I'm Marie from California. I found your website by Mickey Klan's thing, the Maricopa.
Right.
And I just wondered if you could provide any examples of other county governments that have been taken back, because my county government's corrupt, and I got into this whole thing because they've been trying to put marijuana grows by my house, and so I'm, you know, been in the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors trying to fight these things, but I just kind of need some inspiration. I'm brand new to this whole thing, so I mean, this is real quick. I didn't know if you might know of other places that I could look to or research that shows that these counties were taken back, and then, you know, try to find out where they go from there once they remove the people.
Yeah, we're building committees of safety, okay? If you go to our right-hand side of our website and you come down to some statistical information, we have a total, district leaders, militia, committeemen, state, county, grand jury administrators. Where is this? Let's see it here. Total state, no, that's not it either. It looks like it's not here. I don't know why. Let's see. County constituted members. Total grand jury administrator. No, that's not it. Here it is. Total county committees of safety organizers. We have 186 out of 3,000, 34 counties. Okay, we have 186 that are in process of building committees of safety. Committees of safety is the only way, I know of no other, the only way people have government by consent. And we have to organize in the grassroots level, and people have to work things out when they're from their grassroots level, taking back government from the grassroots. It starts taking back our towns, our villages, our cities, and our counties, and eventually our states, and then we can work into the federal level. So it's a process that takes some time to go through, and so people have to roll up their sleeves. If you want liberty, you want to save America, you want a republic, you want to save something for your children, you want to be free and independent, well then you have to roll up your sleeves and get to work. We've laid out the process and the procedure of doing this under our Starter Committee of Safety page. You come down to handbooks, videos, and tools. Okay, and on that page, you'll see a handbook, County Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. It's 66 pages, step by step, point by point, how to create a committee of safety, how to work with the sheriff, take control of the sheriff's office. And we did a thing a couple of weeks ago where we talked about how to take back our schools, and through that process of taking back our schools, dealing with the school boards, and you'll build your membership tremendously that way. So, but people, at that point, you want to take back your schools, you want to take back your towns, your villages, and it's a step-by-step process. But you have to have the people in the county working together, you have to be working with the sheriff. If the sheriff is problematic, then you have to recall him. You give him the opportunity to educate himself, and bring them back under the law to apply the law. And if they don't comply, then you get rid of the sheriff just like you get rid of anyone else. And with the sheriff, you do that through recall. So you file the papers for recall and get rid of them. But it's work, and people have to put the time into it. Many hands make light work, so the more members you have, the less work individually you have to do. But people have to be willing to give up some time every week to get educated, some time every week to learn how to organize and to spend organizing and meeting maybe once a month for 2 hours, getting a little bit of work during that month to do, maybe a couple hours of work that you have to do, depending on what kind of committee you're in. If you, you know, maybe you're in the educational committee, the political committee, the judicial committee, the committee of correspondence, and whatever other committees you have. Okay, so people have to work and do this, but we can take back our entire government, but it starts at the grassroots level, and it works up. It's going to take some time. To really form a powerful committee of safety will probably take you about 6 to 8 months. Okay, if you follow the process and procedure we put up, you'll be able to do it. And again, but you have to get the people involved, and that's what we need to do. It looks like that person stepped out of the queue. I don't know if they're still unmuted.
It's 11 o'clock, Tim.
Okay. All right. Let me just take Tim, because Tim got lost before. We'll give him a minute or two. Tim, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Tim.
Okay, Tim from Connecticut. You can hear me this time?
I can hear you now. Go ahead. We only got a minute or two, though.
Yeah, I changed my my earphones. All right, so you remember you were going to send me an email with that contact
information? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'll do that tomorrow morning. I'll make a note of that. I did remember I had it on a list, and I kept getting pulled away with different things and just never got back to it. But, yes, I'll get that off to you, and I'll give him a call also and let him know that you're going to be calling him. Okay?
Okay,
so I'll get it out tomorrow sometime, all right? I'll call him first before I send it out to you, right?
Okay, thank you. I know you're very busy. I understand that, you know, it could kind of fall through the cracks, as they say. Thank you.
Okay, Tim, thank you. All right, I'll tell you what, we got one other call to Jason. We'll give you a minute to go right ahead, Jason. You got the mic, 1 minute, and we got to close down.
Appreciate it, man. Can you tell me about pop reforms? Can we use them for court of records? You know, are they appropriate, or are there other ways to, because I understand it should be free to be able to.
Absolutely. That's the problem. You know, you could use it if you have to use it. Why not use something they put out if you can use it, to qualify to use it? But it angers me to no end that anybody has to pay a dime to go into any court. We've paid for everything already. We pay their salaries. We pay for the building they're operating in.
Well, just for the sake of time, it's a privilege and a benefit. I just want to make sure that doesn't subject me to any jurisdictions if a pop reform is used.
No, not that I know. Once you're in, they may not even realize you came in that way. So it doesn't matter. But I can't see any way that they can hold that against you to lose any kind of authorities, jurisdiction, or anything.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. With that, we're at the end of our evening. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. Good night, everybody.
Good night.